purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. This is a confirmation of the Krishna consciousness movement. Anyone who takes part in this movement, regardless of what he is, can gain the topmost result achieved by a perfect sannyasi, namely, Brahmagyan, spiritual knowledge. Even more important, he can advance in devotional service. Maharaj Yudhisthira thought that because he was a grihastha, there was no hope of his being liberated, and therefore he asked Narad Muni, how could he get out of material entanglement? But Narad Muni cited a practical example from his own life, established that by associating with devotees and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, any man in any condition of life can achieve the highest perfection without a doubt. Once more, the translation was, the process of chanting the holy name of the Lord is so powerful that by this chanting even grihasthas, householders, can very easily gain the ultimate result achieved by persons in the renounced order. Maharaj Parikshit, I have now explained to you that process of religion. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bastai Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharni Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskacha Desatarni. We are eternally indebted for Srila Prabhupada being so merciful and bringing these wonderful, beautiful, amazing Bhaktivedanta purports to the Western world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavatam is a series of questions by Parikshit Maharaj to Sukadeva Goswami. This is the format of the Srimad Bhagavatam. As we know, he was cursed to die. He had 7 days to live. He prioritized his spiritual life, his Krishna consciousness. He wanted to prepare himself for death. So he asked a series of questions to Sukadeva Goswami. Seventh canto here that we're reading, we've just come to an end, started with a question. The question was, how did Vishnu become partial, like a common man, for the sake of Indra, to kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and to be inimical to others? So, Sukadeva Goswami takes a dozen verses to explain the Lord is impartial. Then, Sukadeva Goswami cites a question which was asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj to Narad Muni. So within the Bhagavatam, there's many times references to other conversations, to other, and this is how it goes in it. So in this point of the seventh canto, Narad Muni is reciting the narrative in response to the question by Yudhisthira Maharaj, and this is the answer to the question of Parikshit that's given by Sukadeva Goswami. So from this point in the Bhagavatam, it's no longer the direct speech of Sukadeva Goswami, rather he's referring to the conversation by Narad Muni. So in the 16th verse of this chapter 15, Sukadeva speaks of this question by Yudhisthira to Narad. The question was that Yudhisthira asked, how did Shishupal merge into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so Yujamukti, even though he was extremely envious and blasphemous of Krishna. How did he get this salvation? This is hard to understand. So, from the first chapter, right through to this 15th chapter, Narad, he is giving the answer to this question for the satisfaction, ultimately, of Parikshit Maharaj, who is about to die. So Narad answers. He said, enmity, or devotional service, fear, affection, lusty desires, if the jiva concentrates on Krishna, the Lord, out of his mercy, will give the same result. So there's different examples of fear, kamsa, enmity, shishupal, devotional service that we try to practice, affection of the Pandavas, the desires, lusty desires of the gopis. All of these different focuses on Krishna. Krishna is so merciful that he will give the same result. This is incredible. And this is a very important aspect of Krishna consciousness in how we, here in the Western world, in our fallen condition, in these Kali Yuga bodies, in these Kali Yuga mentalities, can purify our existence and we can become Krishna conscious. We can escape the cycle of birth and death. So, Narad Muni explains to Yudhisthira that Shishupal, he was previously a gatekeeper. He was one of the pair of Jai and Vijay. But because of offenses to devotees, the four Kumaras, Jai and Vijay were born three different births. Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha in the Sattva Yuga, Ravana and Kumbhakarna in the Treta Yuga, and Shishupal and Dantavakra at the end of the Dwarpa Yuga, just before this present Kali Yuga. So he explains, by way of the explanation, the Leela of Hiranyakashipu and the pastimes of the Lord and Prahlad. So nine chapters are devoted to this. This is the sum and substance. This is the main context of the seventh canto. Nine chapters are given to Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. So Prahlad, he is a very amazing, very special devotee. He is the devotee's devotee. Even the goddess of fortune, she marvels at this. She's always in the attendance of Narayan, giving him service, but even she didn't have to go through the trials and tribulations that Prahlad Maharaj went through. So he is considered, amongst devotees, he's considered a very exalted devotee, just like some musicians are considered the musician's musician. Sarva, Boma Prabhu, he's about to become an internet DJ, a disc jockey. He's going to play all kinds of music for all kinds of people to attract them to. He's going to expand his Facebook. Sarva, who is a musician's, who is an example of a musician's musician? Peter Gabriel. We're not going to dwell on any more mundane topics. But for those of you who know Peter Gabriel, he's considered to be the musician's musician. So Prahlad, he is the devotee's devotee. Then, so nine chapters are given to Prahlad. Hiranyakasipu, Prahlad, Lord Nrisingadev. Then in chapter 11, on hearing, nine chapters about the whole Leela, the exalted character of Prahlad, Yudhisthira Maharaj experiences great pleasure. Yudhisthira then asked about the actual religion of the human being and about the Varnashram system. From this, in this 11th chapter, follows a description of Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, the different divisions of Varnas. The 12th chapter describes the four ashrams, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Chapter 13 is about Sannyas. No Sannyasis here, we'll leave that out. Chapter 14 describes principles for Grihasthas. And now we're on chapter 15. This present chapter today, instructions for civilized human beings. So Narad, to Yudhisthira, continues his narration by giving detailed and deep instructions on the conduct and activities of the actual civilized person. So this is the goal of the Krishna conscious movement, that we can become civilized human beings, that we can become brahminical in our outlook, and we can cause change to be effected in the population at large. And Srila Prabhupada's mission was to save mankind from the dreadful situation of Kali Yuga. So this is the conduct and activities of a civilized person. Today's verse, number 74, describes how chanting of the holy name of the Lord is so powerful, even householders can gain the ultimate result achieved by sannyasis. One time in Vrindavan, I was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and we were walking along the road towards the Chattikara village. It's the main road. We come in taxis now, and it's since been renamed the Bhaktivedanta Marg. So we were walking along then. In those days, Vrindavan was just a dusty village, and there was fields of different types of... I remember one time Prabhupada commented on the mustard seeds growing in the fields beside. So it was just, we're walking through the countryside along this little road. And along this road, there was, a few miles out, there was an ashram, which a rich man had built and maintained. And it was specifically for the purpose of Mayavadi sannyasis to live there, to stop by on their travels. They could stop for 3 days. Most of the sadhus who you see in India, and they reckon that there's about 40 or 50 million sadhus wandering around, just wearing saffron, but most of these are actually vanaprastas. They're not actually sannyasis. So this was an ashram for proper initiated Ekadandi sannyasis. So as we were walking along this day, two of these sannyasis who had been at the ashram, they're not allowed to cook, they're not allowed to... There's different orders from Shankaracharya, but this particular order, they're not allowed to cook, they're not allowed to wear sewn cloth, they go begging every day for the bhiksha, for their food. And so they were coming towards us, they had their tiffin, their pots, and they were going into different few places, ashrams, where people feed saintly people. And as they were coming along, they had bare feet, and they stopped 10 feet away from Prabhupada. They stopped, and in unison, they bowed their heads, and they said, Namo Narayan, respecting to Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, Hare Krishna. And then he walked on. They walked, they passed, they walked on. Prabhupada stopped 10 feet further on. He banged his cane on the road. He banged his cane. There were two sannyasis there. And Prabhupada banged his cane. He was angry. He said, why you did not show respect to these men? And it was a surprise. Prabhupada was so abrupt, so angry. And one of the sannyasis ventured. He said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, they were Mayavadis. Prabhupada banged his cane again. He said, they are sannyas. He said, you must respect the order of sannyas. So sannyas is a very exalted position. It's even the, Prabhupada saying, even the Ekadanya sannyasis, they should be respected. So this is the view. This is the view of the devotee. This sama Pandita Darshanaha. He sees with equal vision. And this is, again, why Krishna, any rasa, any focus on him, in enmity, in friendship, in conjugal, Krishna gives benefit to all these. So this is as difficult for us, very difficult to think like this, to see like this, but this, again, is an essential feature of spirituality. So there's a favorite verse of mine. It was something I read a long time ago, and it really changed the way that I saw Krishna, the devotees, Srila Prabhupada, and particularly the ISKCON, Bhakti Yoga process. So the verse is Srimad Bhagavatam 4:21-26. It's instructions by Prithu Maharaj. 4:21-26. Instructions by Prithu Maharaj. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, since the Krishna consciousness movement going on at the present time is genuine, perfect, authorized, and is following in the footsteps of Prithu Maharaj, anyone who cooperates with this movement or accepts its principles will get the same result as the workers who are actively propagating Krishna consciousness. Anyone, Prabhupada's purport in the Bhagavatam, 4th canto, anyone who cooperates with this movement or accepts its principles will get the same result as the workers who are actively propagating Krishna consciousness. This Bhakti Yoga process is so powerful. So even to assist the devotees in some way, even just to be favorable, this gives liberation. In India, there's a phenomena which is described as the cat and the monkey. The baby kitten is moved from place to place, moved out of danger, moved into shelter, so on and so on, by the mother cat, who simply takes the baby by the scruff of the neck. Folds of skin in the neck, she lifts it up, she moves it. This is how she moves. The monkey, on the other hand, the baby monkey, even when born, even just, you know, has to cling to the mother. The mother's climbing here and there. And you can see this phenomenon a lot in Vrindavan or Jaipur or so many places in India they have monkeys. The baby monkey clings to the. So the mom uses all four hands and legs. Sometimes she'll hold with one, climb with one. But essentially the baby's clinging to the monkey. So the cat is moved around. She does nothing. The kitten just gets moved. Well, the baby monkey has to make this effort to hold on. So this cat and the monkey is likened to Krishna, the cat, giving pure mercy to the devotee. Or the monkey, the baby monkey, is likened to the effort that the devotee must make. So this, is it Krishna's mercy? Or do we have to make effort? This has been a big theological question which split the Ramanuja Sampradaya into two. So there's the north and the south. This was a major debate within the Catholic Church in the 15th century. Is it just all the mercy of God, or do we have to make some effort? So there's arguments on both sides. Srila Prabhupada, he said that a Vaishnava should act in such a way that Krishna sees and then he will give the mercy. So for myself, I take the view, or I act in the understanding that there is no mercy. I'll never get any mercy, and I have to do the work. So this is my particular situation. I feel I have to do the work. Of course, there is an element of mercy, and who gets the mercy, who, you know, whereas in this previous thing I quoted, this previous purport, Prabhupada was saying that anyone who cooperates with this movement or accepts its principles will get the same result as the workers who actively propagate. So very, very, very powerful. But in this purport of this 15th, verse we're doing today, 74, Yudhisthira feels, Prabhupada describes in the purport, that Yudhisthira feels that he has no hope of liberation. He's just... So then the verse is describing the potency of the holy name. So by the mercy of the devotees, one can be successful. This is the key to success in spiritual life, by pleasing the devotees, particularly pleasing the spiritual master, and particularly pleasing the predecessor acharyas. This is the method of advancing in spiritual life. By the mercy of the devotees, one can be successful. But by being disrespectful to the devotees, one can fall down. So this, again, Narad explains, a few verses previously, he explained this was his situation. He was living amongst the Gandharvas. Wonderful situation. He was a wonderful singer. He had a wonderful voice. So many people, particularly women, were just enamored by him. He was just so graceful. So he was living like that in a wonderful, enjoying situation. But he fell down from this. The whole story is recounted. And he took birth in a Sudra family. Very simple, very humble situation as the child of a maidservant, the child of a cleaner woman. He was just very simple, just very... But how, by serving exalted devotees, who came there one time, the whole story is recounted, he again was born as the direct son of Brahma. So for a devotee, it's easy to appreciate the Supreme Lord. The Lord has six opulences. He has strength, knowledge, wealth, fame, beauty, renunciation. He has all of these opulences. Any of these opulences, celebrity is a big thing in our world today. Someone said, a New York artist once said that everyone's a celebrity for 5 minutes. So celebrity, this, all of these things, strength, no, all of these, this is how a person becomes a big person, a woman becomes a big, because they have a little trace of some of these. So Krishna's full in all these opulences. So it's easy for a devotee to rever Krishna, too. He's so beautiful, he's so mystical, he's just so strong, he's just in every way, every quality which is worth attaining, what Krishna has that in the superlative. But it's so much harder for us to appreciate other devotees. What to speak of appreciate, even to be non-critical of other devotees. We seem to have a real, real problem with this. One time in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada was getting his massage. He was silent, and then he said, a devotee, he worships those devotees whom he considers to be more advanced. He said, a devotee, he befriends those devotees, those Vaishnavas whom he considers to be on his same level. And he said, a devotee, he helps, he assists, encourages those devotees whom he considers to be less advanced than himself. He said, but you. He said, whenever you see a person who is more advanced, you simply want to criticize him, bring him down, to let everyone know, actually, no one is more advanced than you. Oh, he's done this, but did you know that he did? Bring him down to your level. He said, when you meet a devotee whom you consider of your same level, he said, you simply want to boast how much service you're doing, what is your accomplishment, to let everyone know you are the topmost devotee. And he said, when you see a devotee whom you consider to be less advanced, he said, you simply want to control him, to exploit him, to have him serve you. He said, this is such a materialistic understanding of devotional service. But all good results will come from patiently applying oneself with determination to the pure process of sadhana bhakti. In verse 34 here, of the same chapter, it describes instructions for civilized human beings. It describes, text 43, 44, it describes pollution by the modes of material nature. Translation. In the conditioned stage, one's conceptions of life are sometimes polluted by passion and ignorance, which are exhibited by attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, false prestige, insults, fault-finding, deception, envy, intolerance, passion, bewilderment. So these are the obstacles. These are the lack of qualities. We can say qualities, the lack of qualities, which are manifest by being situated, by being contaminated by ignorance and passion. Rajagun, tamagun. So all of these, we could talk for years on each of these things, but I just want to say a few words on fault-finding. Fault-finding. Unfortunately, it's easy for us to become callous in our attitude towards other Vaishnavas. To gossip, to criticize. Very, very common in ISKCON. Hey, I'll tell you this. Don't mention my name. This, you know, we just want to pass something along. Don't attribute, don't say I said anything. Don't. So each of us, we're, not each of us, perhaps, many of us, we're very eager to pass on gossip. Often it's unsubstantiated. Within law, they have a concept called hearsay. If Govinda Prabhu tells me something, this is direct communication. I can use this in evidence. I said, Govinda told me this. This is what he told me. But if I then tell Paravidya Prabhu, oh, Govinda told me this, and then Paravidya tells some other devotee, tells Hari Kirtan, oh, Smara Hari, this then becomes hearsay. It is no longer valid. Did Paravidya Prabhu hear Smarahari saying this? No, but then it's no longer admissible. The chain has been broken. It's no longer direct. So this is a principle in law that hearsay has no value. Jai Sri Radhe. That hearsay has no value. Did you see this happen? Did this person tell you this? No, no, but don't use my name. But and then we just spread it and spread it. And often it gets so distorted. There is a principle of natural justice that you should be allowed to meet your accuser. You did this. You know, so you're not even, people don't even know what you're supposed to. A person doesn't even know the accusations against him. It's just everyone's circling, everyone's talking, everyone's gossiping, everyone's, and it's often unsubstantiated slander. And then we wonder why we are not tasting the bliss of Krishna consciousness, which is there for us to taste. So in the verse it's saying that Yudhisthira Maharaj says, well, I'm just a householder. And he said, no, you can buy the holy name, you can get the exact results that the sannyasis, that renunciates obtain by having nothing to do with the material world. They're not gossiping. They're often in seclusion. They're just doing their bhajan, they're meditating. There's so many things. They're not involved in the village katha. But they have to apply themselves purely to the chanting process. So often it's unsubstantiated slander. Slander is when you say something about a person which is untrue. Libel is when you write it down. If you write it down, it's libel. Same thing, you say it, it's slander. It's often unsubstantiated slander which is peddled by one person to the other. In meetings, with devotees, very seldom do I ever hear any original thought, any original commentary. It's just something which is peddled, the same thing it's again and again and again. It's not even original. And people, people say, Smarahari, he's not very empathic. I don't want to hear it. It's not even coming from them. How are you doing? Well, probably really got to go. I said, he's not very, I was just trying to share with him. He's not very empathic. Why do I want to be empathic with a bunch of unsubstantiated nonsense which people are saying? So, the biggest peddlers of this slander are the Ritviks. Now, I want to ask you, I don't know if everyone knows what Ritvik is. I'm not going to go into it. I don't know if anyone knows any Ritviks. But I have a simple question. Have you ever seen a Ritvik smiling? Have you ever met a happy Ritvik? They are miserable. I know them. Can't even crack a smile. I tell him my funniest joke. It's not a happy state of existence. And who knows what their... So somehow we proclaim to have such a high regard for Krishna, wonderful festival yesterday, but such a chronic disregard for devotees. In the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, Divine and Demoniac Natures, texts 1 to 3 list a number of qualities. Page 746. Prabhupada gives apasum, apaisum, aversion to fault finding. Prabhupada gives this in his purport. He says, apaisanam means that one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. Very simple. Apaisanam means that one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. Of course, Prabhupada adds, of course, to call a thief is not fault finding. But to call an honest person a thief is very offensive for one who is making advancement in spiritual life. So, Paishanam means that one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. Of course, to call a thief is not fault-finding. But to call an honest person a thief is very much offensive for one who is making advancement in spiritual life. So, when I tell Govinda something, may be true or may not be true, but he's hearing from me, then if he tells someone, he doesn't want it to be him. He tells someone else. They tell it to someone. At this point, you cannot even substantiate if it's true. If you say, well, let me go and ask Smarahari. Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, well, this is. But it's just somehow that we delight and certain parties, certain groups make an industry out of delighting in people's difficulties or so-called difficulties. Because I'm an older devotee, because I've been around a long time, because I know a lot of these senior people personally, I'm personal friends with them, I know many things. It's not even true. The person, it's not even true. And so there becomes a mini-series, there becomes a whole, could be TV show on the, and it's not even true. I know it's not even true, but somehow, and then people do not even want to be convinced that it's not true because it fits into their, the internet is just rife with these. I say that internet, you need basically, there are a few exceptions, but basically you need three qualifications to be an internet journalist. The first qualification is that you're on welfare. Welfare means that You're getting paid by the government. You are saying you got a bad back or some mental condition. Somehow or other, they want you to work. The economy is bad. The government tries to force you to work, do something, stack shelves in Costco, you know, get it. You know, they want you to work. But people become expert at not working. So the first thing is that you're on welfare. Generally, you're on welfare. You got nothing to do all day except write things on the internet. And then there's some other unsuspecting person in the far corner of the world. Wow, this guy is so, you know. We know the guy's a nutcase, but they think he becomes some big guru, internet guru. So the first thing is you're on welfare. The second thing, with very few exceptions, and I know all these people, I'm talking from personal experience, and there are exceptions. Mostly they're on medication. They're either on government medication or they're on self-imposed medication. Most of these people, they're medicated permanently. And the third qualification, of course, you have a broadband link. You're on broadband. So you're on welfare, you're on medication, you're on broadband. And they just produce volumes and volumes of complete, I mean, it's, I studied law. I have a law degree. There's not a court in the planet, even these jumped up kangaroo courts and the banana, there's no evidence. It just becomes an emotion. It becomes mostly to justify not following the process of sadhana bhakti, not carrying on the Nam Sankirtan movement, none of the processes. They feel justified in this because, anyhow. So, but to call a thief, this is fair play. But to assist in spreading unsubstantiated, malicious gossip is one of the major obstacles in making any progress in Bhakti Yoga. The internet, so many offenses are committed. There's no due process. There's no evidence. There's no fair system of hearing. There's no impartial people who will make a judgment on it, like you do in the legal processes in countries. Hearsay is not evidence. Most of us are guilty of spreading unsubstantiated hearsay. And it's a major, major block in our Krishna consciousness. So in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, in order to get the benefits, in order to reap the benefits of Srila Prabhupada, as an old man, he came to the West, underwent so many hardships. He came on the Jaladuta. The Jaladuta, the Sindhya shipping company, they had about 40 ships. You can get a whole list of all the ships. The Jaladuta wasn't even a big ship. It was like, I think, about number 17 or something in terms of tonnage, in terms of size. It was a little ship which was designed to go around the coast of India, to Mangalore, to Madras. That's what it was designed. But you know how things are in India. They want to get the most out of everything. And so they were doing big transatlantic crossings. It wasn't designed for that. And shortly after Prabhupada went, it was actually scrapped. It wasn't actually seaworthy. Wouldn't have got an MOT had it been registered anywhere respectable. So Srila Prabhupada went on that ship with nothing. It costs more to go to the cinema. For send your kid to the cinema on Wednesday, it's £4. Go to the cinema on a cheap day. Nobody goes on Wednesday. Kids go, they all go, the kids all go, teenagers, they all go to the cinema. £4 on a Wednesday. Prabhupada didn't even have £4 in his pocket when he went to New York. Not even a cinema ticket. He didn't have any contacts. There's one devotee had an orphanage in South India. And British Airways thought, wow, this is great. This is wonderful what you're doing. There's an Englishman over there helping these little kids. This is wonderful. Little railway children. And they gave him a code. And he could just get on the phone, give them the code, say, yes, sir, where would you like to go? They were giving them free business flights around the world. They said, this is great. We'll sponsor. This is one. We'd like to help you in your efforts. So Prabhupada, when I went to India, it was £63 was the flight. That was what it cost, 63 quid. You go to India. So we send, so I think by that £63, might have been £100 to go to New York too. Are we saying Prabhupada couldn't raise £100? He couldn't get somewhere to Radhanath Maharaj. He has a disciple, Sunil Agarwal. He has a house right in Grosvenor Square where the American Embassy is. He's got the whole, it's mostly all flats, those places. He has got the whole five-story townhouse. I don't know what it's worth now, but a few years ago, I heard that he was offered £50 million for the house. He said, no, I'll just keep it. The guy's a billionaire. So Radhanath Maharaj, Jamuna, Guru, they just stay, big place, big, I don't know how many bedrooms, got a huge big place. One of the girls here goes down and sews cloth for the deities. So Prabhupada, he didn't have anyone who had any business. Swamiji, you can use our apartment, but not in September. We're having we need it for a week for the trades fortnight. He had nowhere to go. He had nowhere to, no money, no friends, nowhere to go, no book contract. No, I feel that Srila Prabhupada did it like this to show us forever that the founder of the Hare Krishna movement did it on nothing. So not that we have to pay off our mortgage before we can preach, not that we have to get a PhD and get some books printed, and Oxford Press says, validates us that we've got books in printing. Not that we have to have had a successful business, and then we tie down the business, we get the manager, but we've still got stocks and shares, we've got options, we can transfer the assets. Not in any material calculation of how one might do things. Srila Prabhupada decided, in my view, not to do any of these things, but rather to show us forever that we can become Krishna conscious, we can become perfect human beings, we can induce others to become perfect human beings, because this is what the Krishna consciousness movement is, simply by the desire to do so. We simply have the desire. We want to become Krishna conscious. We want to spread Krishna consciousness to others. We want to do Harinam. We want to do book distribution. This is such a gift that we have received. The more we apply ourselves to the process of Krishna consciousness, the more amazing it is, the gift that we actually have. And in this, we want to give it to others. It's not that we just want to be comfortable at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we want to be comfortable in our houses. No, this is selfish. This is not the mood of the Acharya. It's not the mood of Krishna consciousness. It definitely wasn't what Srila Prabhupada had in mind when he came to the West. When Srila Prabhupada, he set up everything. Life membership, the spiritual sky, incense, restaurant, so many things. Prabhupada told them how to do everything. And all this money was being used and invested and paying for different things, keeping things going and expanding and so on and so on. Srila Prabhupada also had personal money that people gave him. People gave him Guru Dakshin. He also gave him money. So very soon, Prabhupada, he started the GBC. He knew he was an old man. He was dying. He had had heart attacks on the way. He was diabetic. His body was giving out. He was an old man. He knew that he wouldn't last long. So immediately he started setting things up and having his young disciples become trustees, take responsibility for different things. So very, very early, he explained, This is this, and here is my personal account. This is money that people give me for Guru Dakshin and gifts. People give him money. So in that account, and then he had trustees on the account, so this is what it's for. So Prabhupada said, this account is the... He set up an insurance company, and the insurance company was to continue the worship of Mayapur and Vrindavan. And that was, and at the time of his death, time of his passing, there was $1.2 million in change in that account. So people had given, Prabhupada had $1 million that people had given as gifts. He could have lived nicely on that. He could have retired. He could have, you know, $1 million in those days. What's that now? What could you buy in terms of property, in terms of stocks and shares? Is it 25 million? Is it 50 million? Is it 15? It's a lot of money. But Prabhupada didn't do that. He had no idea of comfort, no idea. He just wanted to spread Krishna consciousness. So this is our legacy, this is our gift, this is the treasure that we have. We have the ability to become Krishna conscious, we have the ability to spread Krishna consciousness, but one of the big difficulties that we have is this criticizing other devotees. Criticizing them just for, you know, and some people make an industry out of it. They have a career out of criticizing devotees. But have you ever seen any of them smile? Are they happy people? Is it joyfully performed? I submit that they are the evidence that it's something which does not work, which we should shy away from. We should offer respects to the Vaishnavas, and we should be very, very careful in criticizing anyone. Vanchakalpa, Tarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu, Bhayeva Cha, Patit Pavan, Bhavnebhyo, Vaishnavebho, Namo Namaha.